Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Stand clear. Oh.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? Thank you very much for tuning into another episode of Dr. Homebrew. We are back. We have two beers, one brewer, once again, which is sort of the ongoing theme lately, which I like.
Kind of yeah, appreciate in the old days, we used to make people compete for, you know, their beer was, you know, if was good, if they would compete against the other brewer, and we would have a little ceremony at the end for the losingest brewer of the day or something.
I remember that.
Yeah. What did we do? Yeah. Yeah, at least your beer will smell good.
Something like that. That's right. We used to do that, and then we had a sponsor give stuff away. But, you know, hey, man, that was hard. Just get everyone's email address and website and just an address and get them in and do the thing. It was tough. It's a pain in the butt, man.
Sending.
Yeah. So, you know, we don't do that anymore. But, you know, that's all, you know, now Scott's competing against himself. Scott, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah.
How about you, gentlemen?
I've got a bet as to who's going to win this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I stacked the deck in my favor on purpose.
That's what you got to do, man. That's what you got to do. No, we have a couple beers. We have German Pils, which of course is, you know, the show mascot, basically. And then you have a Belgian Triple, which I feel like I'm in 2004 all over again. I don't remember the last time, aside from this show, I don't even remember the last time I saw a Belgian Triple, like in my, you know, space. Everyone has space backgrounds on Zoom right now. You know what I mean? It's not something that I just, like, I don't know. It's not something I come across often. So it's kind of nice to try some of that out.
There's a great restaurant in Palo Alto called La Bodeguita del Medio. It's like Cuban food.
Yeah.
And they've had a tap of Chimay White on for about 25 years.
That's
consistently, every now and then, I don't go there that much anymore because it's too far away. But I was there like end of last year and there was Chimay White on tap. So of course I had some. But
of course you did.
Belgian Triple in the wild. You have to have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You come across the Carmelite once in a while. That's tasty stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you guys go out more than I do.
Right. You know? Don't live sheltered in our little cave all day and
no,
all night.
No, you mean healthy is what you mean. Yeah, I mean, you know, when I go to the store, there's never really been too many like commercial examples, I guess, really. You know, you have the Carmelite or you have your St. Bernardus or whatever, and occasionally you'll find something else. But yeah, that's about it. I don't know. Anyway, so all that being said, I'm excited to drink it tonight. I'm excited to talk about it. That'll be great. Maybe it'll be my new style. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe the thing I want to get into, you know, a lot. Speaking of getting into things, man, I brewed again last weekend. We'll talk about it on the next show. We'll talk about it on the next show.
Okay. Yeah.
But it was fun. I realized that I need to find a way to jerry-rig my sink faucet so I could brew in the house. Because I brew on the Brewzilla, right? I'm more beer. And there's no way to cool it down. Because we have one of those faucets with like the pull down sprayer, you know, we like hit the button and it sprays. And
us too.
Yeah. And I got on Amazon, right? Some weird company that's probably not really real. It's just a bunch of consonants. And like they threw a dartboard at a wall of vowels and was like, oh, let's do the U. Doesn't mean anything. But the thread, when you take the aerator off, the thread does not match anything. I swear to God, it's like metric or something like that. And I went to Lowe's and I unpackaged every single one. I tried and nothing, it just does not, there's nothing I can do to put it in there. So I have to like get a Y maybe and just
Their manufacturing tolerances are probably crap. I mean, it's probably not anything, right? It's probably not metric or standard.
It could be. Could be just something completely random.
I can tell you later on why those companies all have like 12 consonants together as a name.
Oh, I'm sure.
If we all want to get too deep into that, rabbit hole.
Well, yeah, it's because they get sued and they get told to stop and then they just start another company.
No, they want to get access to Amazon Analytics. You have to have, if you want analytics, you have to have a U.S. registered trademark. And the fastest way is to get put like 12 letters together and then phony up a specimen. It's an incredible problem with phony specimens, and they've been digging out from that for about 2 years, and they're making some progress. But yeah, you have these companies aren't like, just like you said, if something goes wrong, they just quit, they reform across the street, new name, no judgment, no whatever, and then they just do the exact same thing with the same tooling and just register a new name and give that to Amazon.
With an umlaut over the U instead of just a regular U.
It's Quervenix,
Yeah, it's weird, man. So I got to get like a splitter, I guess, and go underneath the sink. And maybe if I'm trying to figure out if I care enough to do that. But
could you just run a garden hose into your house?
Well,
and then have it run, go back out, like just
I can
crack the door. And
I probably will in the summertime. But like right now, I can't do that. You know, and then I got to haul my fermenter and like carry it. And it's a whole thing anyway. We'll talk more Australian style.
Just let it pour that boiling wort right into that thing. And then just
my
come
beer
back 24 hours later.
My beer is bad enough. I don't need to help it with just not doing anything. You know what I mean? If I just abandoned it, I just would stop brewing. There's no need. There's no need to continue at that point. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. That's what I think about it. Anyway, let's give him some beer, fellas. What do you think? This German Pilsner is giving me the side eye and I kind of want to tackle it. You're right with that? Let's do that. Scott, how's it going, man? Thanks for sending in this beer. I appreciate that. Of course.
No, my pleasure. Thank you for all your flexibility in scheduling this.
Oh, hey, man.
Looking forward to this.
You're doing us a favor, dude. German Pils. What's going on there? Have you done that before? Is this a new style you're tackling, or are you trying to polish this one up?
This is the first time. There's a local brewery here that has a fantastic German Pils.
Where are you and what's it called?
I'm in Indianapolis, and this was at Chili Waters downtown, and I believe, I can't remember the name of the beer, but it's their German Pils, and it is fantastic. And when I tried that, I was like, I have to try this. So.
Nice. I love the beer at Chili's. It's the best.
Mm.
Kidding. Those guys are probably listening.
That was a funny joke.
I know it was. Of course it was.
Laugh. What the hell?
Well, you know, man, look, insulting craft beer. You still can't do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Look, I'm just going to say, it looks great. You can see my dumb face in it, and it smells even better. So, you know, I might be like Clark Griswold cutting the Christmas, you know, turkey open on Christmas vacation. But we'll see. Anyway, Cooper, why don't you stop chugging random beers?
Yeah, man.
Cooper's just pounding beers.
No, I was just rinsing the glass that had Belgian Triple in the bottom, and I wanted to get it clean.
There you go.
So I could pour pills back into the glass. Let's
why don't you kick us off with Scott's Belgian Pilsner, please.
Belgian
and then Pilsner. A German triple. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Okay. This is a 5D German Pils in the 2021 guidelines. And the nose, I got a pleasant kind of medium Pils malt in there. And I got a lightly corn-like note at the very beginning, I felt like. Not too distracting, but just a little sulfury note in there. And it's the malt is grainy, lightly crackery. In the nose here, there's a fair amount of hops. It's a medium low floral with a medium light spiciness alongside that. The beer seems lagered cleanly, despite the, you know, a little bit of sulfur in any lager is usually okay as long as it's in balance with everything else, in harmony with everything else that's going on, and not sticking out like, you know, creamed corn or something and all over the place. There's no acetaldehyde or diacetyl at all in here. No obvious esters noted. That sulfur blew off quite quickly. So nice aroma, 9 out of 12. Appearance-wise, it's brilliantly clear, yellow-colored beer. Medium white head, very fine bubbles, persists really beautifully. Couldn't not give it 3 out of 3 points for appearance. Going into the flavor, that Pils malt, it kind of flipped on me a little bit here. You know, I thought I got more of the malt in the nose. And once I got into the flavor, that Pils malt comes in low up front, not sweet. And it's a little crackery, but then the hop flavor comes forward to kind of dominate. It doesn't really overpower the malt completely, but it is a pretty big floral, you know, kind of a medium high, a spicy, you know, medium light spiciness with that too. And the balance here is definitely to the hops in this. And helping that is that it finishes quite dry and the bitterness is medium. And those hops really linger in there with some malt into the aftertaste. But, you know, the malt that's in the aftertaste is not really a sweet malt, just like the residual crackery, maybe a little, you know, bready biscuity thing. But it's a long, a dry finish. It's which it can and you know, should have in some good examples that'll really accent that long finish. But it's not too like overtly minerally either. Sometimes they'll do that with the, you know, the sulfates being pushed up high, and if that becomes noticeable to me, it's a little bit of a detractor. So pretty well done there. I gave it a 15 out of 20 on flavor. Mouthfeel wise, it's crisp and refreshing. Medium light body, medium carbonation, no alcohol warmth noticeable here. It's not creamy or anything. It lacks any trace of astringency. It's just really crisp, just goes off the tongue and is done and invites another sip. So yeah, overall, this is a very clean German Pils, really on the dry and crisp side for style. I would say it's lacking just a bit of that firm, you know, not, it shouldn't be sweet, but it's lacking that edge of sweetness, that doughy malt character that might make it a little more complex and maybe more balanced and flavorful. It's not coming across watery or seltzery in, you know, in any sense of the word, with all the hop flavors and the malt flavors that are there, but just being so dry, you know, it doesn't need to be a sweet bomb, but just a little more body, a little more hint of the malt character in there would help balance that. But just drinks really smoothly and easily. You know, I can tell the good German ingredients were used here. So yeah, just get that malt to carry through just a little bit more alongside the hops. And this is a real winner. But I scored it at 8 out of 10 for overall impression. The mouthfeel was 4 out of 5 for a 39 total out of 50. And yeah, I thought it was an excellent German Pils. Most of the things I mentioned are fine points. And again, that sulfur in the nose, it blew off really fast. I'm not sure if it was even DMS or just kind of a, you know, some other, a light little sulfury note in there with the fermentation that sometimes yeast cleans up a little more than other times, but in lagers, it's always a lot of times an element of that. And I always look for it in lagers. So yeah, nicely done. And thank you for sharing that.
All right. Very good. Char.
Yes. So, hello, Scott, I have to give you the usual question that I give everybody. Are you in a homebrew club?
Yeah, I'm in two clubs. The local one here is Foam Blowers of Indiana. I'm not, I don't participate much because the club nights they always conflict with my work schedule.
Well, next time I go to Indiana, call me Foam.
And then I'm a member of the online, the Brew Club, BRU Club, which is affiliated with Brewlosophy.
Well, that's cool.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
You know, it's sometimes that's just the way it is where, like, whatever club you're in locally just isn't the nights don't work out. So
right,
stuff happens. You know, I've been to Indianapolis once, like in the mid 90s. And I remember it's funny. I remember clearly almost 30 years ago going to this brew pub called Broad Ripple and that it was really good. Is that still there?
It was the Broad Ripple Brew Club. It is the first brew pub in Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
They started in the early 1990s. I don't know the gentleman who started it, but he's a proper Britishman who moved here and wanted to replicate the British pub experience and culture here. So I've been there a handful of times. It is, you walk in and it feels like you're in England. And they have cask conditioned ales with a beer engine pump.
Nice.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's and the beer is delicious, and yeah, it's an Indianapolis institution. It really is.
Nice. I'm glad it's still in business and that it's still making great beer.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So let's turn to your beer. I enjoyed this quite a bit. You know, JP already held this up to the camera, so I don't need to do that to show how clear this is. The bottle inspection, check that. It was a high fill, but there was still a hiss, which is always a great sign that there's going to be some carbonation in there. Aroma, you know, maybe it's just my nose. I got a low level of aroma overall for everything. I got sort of a low level of Pils malt, low level of like spicy noble hops, no esters, no off aromas, most importantly. So 7 out of 12, primarily due to, I wanted something more. I wanted some more hops or more malt or something out of the nose. And I freely admit it might just be my nose. You know, it's wintertime, it's rainy, you know, God knows what's happening. You know, the heater's on, you know, frequently, so it could just be a perceptual issue on my part. So that was 7 out of 12. Appearance, 3 out of 3. The head was very large and very persistent. It stuck around for a while. Wearing this little glass about half full, I had foam almost all the way to the top, and I had foam persist, you know, halfway into writing the score sheet. So that's an achievement. Pale straw color. You know, all these things are so hard to do at a homebrew level for a lager. So kudos to you. The appearance is phenomenal. Flavor, I got more flavor than I did aroma, which makes me wonder if I was having a perceptual issue with my nose. Initially, the flavor was low malt, not super perfumey pills, but there's some pills in there. I'm curious if there's maybe a mix of Pilsner and Two Row or something like that. We'll find out later. Bitterness came up to more than balance. That malt mid-palate, it is really the classic, what they call German firm bitterness for a Pilsner. You know, it's not an IPA, but it's substantial and it's there. And that's definitely present in this beer. I got a low spicy hop flavor, very well attenuated. Finish is long and it's balanced toward bitter. It's not exclusively bitter, but it definitely tilts the scale a little bit in that direction. 13 out of 20 for flavor. Mouthfeel, 5 out of 5. You really hit everything you could hit in Pilsner here, as far as I'm concerned. Body is medium light, high carbonation. Like going back to that bottle inspection, even with that little tiny headspace, there was still an appreciable hiss when I opened that up. And that doesn't happen without high carbonation. No warming. It's more perky than creamy. Not astringent. But it's sharp in a good way that Pilsner ought to be because of the high carbonation and the hot bitterness. You know, it ought to be something crisp that kind of, it wakes you up a little bit and lets you know that you're drinking it. And this definitely does. 5 out of 5. Overall impression, 7. So I give this 35 out of 50. I really like this beer. The bitterness and carbonation really make this bright and lively and really make this, I think, and those aspects, which are often so hard to get right at a homebrew level, you really got those right. I'm not sure how you'd go about doing this, and I'm not sure if this is just my nose, but having more malt aroma, just a little bit more, and a little bit more hop aroma would be welcome. But having said that, I think this is really good, and it might just be that I'm on nose tilt right now, and we'll discuss. Coop, what did you give this one?
39. Yeah, right, and I think I judged it fairly cold too. I would kind of agree that there wasn't as much coming out in the aroma as I'd like to, but I kind of chalked that up personally, you know, in my subconscious to being a little colder and just adjusting to that. But it's warming up now, and it is still fairly light in the aroma.
That's,
but not
that's the experience
unpleasant
I'm
at
having
all.
Too. Yeah. And it's the flavor. There's nothing. I mean, the flavor is every bit what I would like it to be. Pretty much. I mean, it's maybe even a little bit more malt flavor might be nice, but you know, it's absolutely no off flavors or nothing off about this beer at all, which is an achievement.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'd probably land a 38-40-ish. It feels like it needs to be a little crisper somehow. Maybe that's carbonation, maybe a little more bitterness, but I think it's, I mean, this is great. I mean, you walk into any bar, you would definitely want another one of these.
Yeah, I'd be happy to get this at a bar that was serving a craft pils.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Here, hang on. Let's take a quick break. And then, Scott, when we come back, we can run through the recipe. That'd be cool. All right. Hang on, everyone. It's Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back.
What's up, homebrewers? Hey, let me ask you a question. You spend a lot of time making your beer taste the way you want it to, right? Some of you even send beers into Dr. Homebrew for feedback. Well, the next logical step in your creativity is to craft some labels for those beers. And there's nobody better at creative labels than GrogTag. Their easy-to-use designs let you turn out some pretty amazing stuff like labels, bottle caps, coasters, even six-pack carriers with minimal effort on your part. They have a range of label sizes that fit any vessel you can think of. Bottles, cans, growlers, kegs. GrogTag has you covered. Head over to grogtag.com today and check out their line of amazing, fully customizable templates and get your beer looking its best. Grogtags are water resistant, reusable, and will have your naked bottles looking great in no time. That's grogtag.com, and be sure to use code BNARMY at checkout to save 10% on your order.
All right, thanks for hanging on, everyone. All right, we're here with Scott, and he's going to run us through his, what is it? What is the median? 39? German Pilsner. Scott, take it away, man. What's in this beer?
Sure. Thanks for all the feedback. Really appreciate it. It's always moderately anxiety-provoking for me to bottle it up and send it off, because it's, in my experience, you know, what comes out of the keg and what comes out of a bottle 3 weeks later is rarely ever the same.
Yeah.
So for this is my first time brewing this. I did a full volume, no sparge, brew in a bag on an Anvil Foundry, 120 volt, which we can talk about that later. 5.7 gallon batch in the fermenter, 94% Weyermann Flor malted pills and 6% Carafoam. I used RO and built to style. Weighted towards sulfate, 150 sulfate, 75 chloride, and 80 calcium. I did a step mash, 125 protein rest for 10 minutes, a 60-minute beta at 146, and then 15-minute alpha at 158, mash pH of 5.3. I did a 90-minute boil on a 120-volt system. Is more than a simmer, but not really rolling. For hops, I did at 60 minutes, 32 IBUs of German Magnum. At 15 minutes, I did 4 IBUs each of Tettnanger and Sots. And then at 0, I did 1 ounce of Tettnanger and 0.5 ounces of Sots. And my post-boil pH was, you know, 5.3. So I added 2 milliliters of lactic acid, hopefully targeting a post-ferment pH of 4.1, 4.2. OG of 1052. I used White Labs 830 German lager yeast with a starter. I used canned wort, and I diluted it to a starter gravity of 1030, which is lower than what they recommend, but it works for me. Oxygenated and pitched the slurry at 48. Allowed free rise to 50 and kept it there for a week. After 8 days, fermentation activity started to slow. So I unplugged the chiller and let it free rise up to ambient at 65 Fahrenheit. Day 16, final gravity of 1010. Started the cold crash on day 18. Gelatin fine day 20. And kegged using a closed loop transfer. Function-free transfer on day 28. Lagered it for 5 weeks until I bottled it and sent it to you all.
you can really tell that gelatin fining works. It's old school, but it's still probably my favorite way to fine. Mm. And you can't argue with the results here.
Yeah, and it's super clear.
Yep.
Yeah, what do you guys think of the recipe?
So it was, what percent Weyermann pills, you said?
94.
That's what I thought. 94? Wow, that's just...
And 6% Cara. Foam.
That's just really weird to me that, I mean, you doesn't really get that much better than Weyermann pills. And usually that is that perfumey, like classic example of Pilsner malt. And I'm just kind of wondering, you know, it's not quite what I would expect to have this beer taste like with a 94% Weyermann pills. Did you maybe mill it at the homebrew store and not use it for a while potentially, or?
No, I milled it at home, 0.03 inches, so it's pretty powdery.
Yeah.
Milled that the day before. I have noticed that with most of my beers, the malt flavor and aroma tends to be a little light. I don't know why that is. I wonder if it's the 120 volt system and it's not as vigorous of a boil. I don't have that great of a boil off rate. So I found that I usually have to juice a little bit with a touch of Vienna or use a Bock yeast or over bitter on paper to make it turn out how I want. But that's just pure speculation on my part.
That's an interesting speculation, though, because yeah, the boil, you know, driving a little harder boil, it is going to accent the malt, if anything. So, you know, that slight effect of a rolling vigorous boil could make the difference. Yeah, I don't know that cheating and adding some other malt would twist it in exactly the right direction, but it might hint at that. But yeah, it's really good as it is. This would be great to drink in the summer. It's almost, you know, like a lighter version of pills. That's just like really easy to quaff and just would be really refreshing on a summer day, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, even right now when it's cold as shit outside.
Well, exactly. It's an interesting question about that, about the sort of simmering boil. And I'm very interested in this because I'm going to pull the trigger on getting some kind of little all-in-one electric system in the next 2-3 months. And, you know, on the one hand, I don't want a 220 because I have one 220 outlet in my house and it's in my garage and my dryer is plugged into it. And I don't want to screw around with that. And the little extension cords for those are, I think they're like $100. I mean, they're expensive if you get one that's not going to burn your house down.
Right.
But having said all that, you know, I've kind of had the same thought that you have, Scott, that I don't know that 110 is going to get you up to the boil that you really need, whether it's an anvil or a Bruzilla or a grandfather or whatever you're doing. Because it's not a matter of how well you've built the machine. It's a matter of, you know, how much heat can you generate from resistance from 110 volt, you know, standard current in the U.S. That's where, I don't know. It's like when you go to, if you ever go to Europe and we have a little tea kettle that boils water and it plugs into 110 and it takes a long time to boil that water. And that's, you know, maybe a couple of quarts at most. You'd use that same one in England or Germany or whatever. That thing's boiling in like 30 seconds. It's ready to go. And it's not a linear, like it's twice as much or half the time. I should say it's not half the time at 220. It's like, you know, a tenth of the time. So I wonder if not getting up to that rolling boil is going to affect your malt flavor and the or malt aroma in that way. And I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah,
it's a nice system to be working on though too, and you can brew a really good beer with it. I wonder if they're convertible to 220 after you buy the 110 version, and if you want to put in another plug in your house to do it. But yeah,
you can the version you can. There's you flip a switch and you have to cut the cord, and I didn't want to mess with it.
No, it's not worth it.
I brew inside, and you know, the boil off rate is not that great, which works. You know, my wife complains about it brewing inside, but like you were talking about before, I mean, it's very, very convenient for me to brew in my basement and by my wet bar because I've got everything right there and I know where everything is. And, you know, I've modified my recipes and processes to accommodate what I think is the issue, which is primarily the lower voltage and boil off, but just a guess.
Have you ever thought about getting like a saucepan, like not a giant saucepan, but just like maybe one that's a 6-8 quart, scoop some of that wort out, put it on your stovetop and get it to a solid boil and then pouring it back in to kind of help it out getting to and staying at 212? Because it's like, easier to maintain 212 than it is to get up to 212.
Interesting thought. I've not done that. It's possible. Yeah, I can do it. We have gas burners in our kitchen. There's the potential hazard of carrying around boiling sticky liquid up and down the stairs.
Yeah, I'm just spitballing here. And did you say up and down the stairs? You don't want to do that.
It's a three-ring circus going on in the house. Oh, there's a boil over upstairs, honey.
Yeah.
Oh,
God. I mean, if you're walking down those stairs and you trip and you burn yourself and you break a leg, that's messed up. You don't want to do that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, with the speaking just from the Bruzilla aspect, this last beer, which we'll talk about the next show, it was cold outside. So it's very much, you know, even though it has like an insulated jacket, it's neoprene, it doesn't do much. So it was rolling It wasn't very vigorous. In the summertime, I can get it, you know, going pretty well. I've never noticed anything. The results from those, you know, from that system have been good enough for me. You know, we've talked about those beers on the show too. So, I don't know that it's a boil voltage, you know, thing. Yeah. For me, I mean, I don't know. For me, it's just, it might be just like a recipe where maybe there's, because it was Pils Malt and then what else? Victory is what you said?
6% Carafoam.
Carafoam. Because Carafoam has like a sweeter kind of thing to it, doesn't it?
It's more just to accent the head, all right? I mean, you're using it for...
But that would be Carapils. Carafoam has, isn't it a little darker? So there's a little more sweetness. And I wonder if that's what's poking through the malt and sort of preventing everything from like really melding together. Next time you're at the homebrew shop, Scott, taste it. Let me know. Because it's been years since I've done it, since I've used it. But I remember John Mayer used to use it in at Rogue. And he was like, yeah, it lends like the sweetness. And I went downstairs to the grain room and ate it. I was like, oh, yeah, it's a noticeable difference.
But they're not really toasty or sweet. I think they just add a little body and dextrins. I mean, you know, Carapils and Carafoam are both dextrin malts.
But if you taste them side by side, Carapils and Carafoam will have a taste difference.
Yeah. I haven't used Carafoam, so I can't really say myself what it tastes like or what it's going to add. But
I wonder,
I think of them both as fairly neutral myself. But
yeah, you know, next time you're there, try it.
I will.
Cooper, because I'll be interested, again, to get anybody's feedback on it, because that's where I think the issue might be, is if you can drop down to a Carapils, you might still get that head retention. Not that you even need it, to be honest with you. I mean, this beer had a pretty good head retention, and you know, it could have been a little more carbonated. So, I don't know. I would say that your issues aren't 110 related, but you know your system better than I do. You seem like a smarter guy than I am.
It's something you can play with that doesn't involve messing with electricity or hot liquids up and down the stairs,
which is preferable. Yeah. Man, I
just add an immersion boiler. You know, like you buy one of those little plug-in things.
Oh yeah, dude, I
thought about it.
I have to like
thought about doing that.
Heat my sparge water up and then carry it outside in a kettle, and then stand on a stool and then scoop. God. Yeah, I'm like, oh my god, even that's enough. I don't want to like be doing more of that.
We're getting a call from Taryn someday, aren't we? Preface with maybe. I have bad news for you guys. Yeah,
good news and bad news. let's see, do we have anything else for Scott or vice versa in reverse?
I can tell by the way he's speaking about brewing his beer that he knows what he's doing and why, and that's half the battle. So just keep doing what you're doing with these beers and dial them in, enter them in competitions and see what other judges say. But this one is for me, you know, a good chunk of the way there. Not quite to world class, but just excellent and really easily drinkable.
Yeah, agreed.
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, it sounds like that's it. So we'll actually, we won't let you go because you're going to be on for the next segment for the triple. Right.
We need to taste more of his beer and see how malty that one is.
Yeah. So hang on, everyone. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and open that other beer from Scott. So hang on, everyone. It's Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small four-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine, or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
Now, back to the examination.
All right, thanks for sticking around, everybody. We are about to bust this Belgian triple up wide, if you know what I'm trying to say, everybody. You know what I mean? All right, Scott, so the German Pils was your first time. What about this Belgian triple?
Also first time. Last Valentine's, my wife got me a beer basket. She went to Total Wine. She didn't know anything about beer. And she said to the clerks there, said, "Hey, I want to get a basket of really nice beers for my husband." And three guys just went around and they basically filled up the basket with Belgians. And I've never had Belgians before until then.
Oh, nice.
And I'm like, oh, okay. I get it. This is a different type of beer. I'm going to have to try this. So, you know, I read a lot about it and I know the fermentation's tricky. So I just decided just to try it, see how it turned out.
Okay, excellent. What do you think of the process before we get into it? Did you enjoy it? The thing you like to do?
Well, I mean, really, there wasn't anything special about, you know, making the wort. It was just the fermentation side, which we can talk about.
Okay.
Yeah, afterwards, it was tricky.
Let's do that. Shar, why don't you light us up, buddy?
Oh, yeah. So that lighting you up right now, my friend.
Nice. So
aroma, let me go back up. Bottle inspection. A lot of this will kind of echo what we talked about for the German Pils. Bottle inspection, you know, high fill, hiss on open. It's a good sign for a beer that's supposed to be highly carbonated. That's a good thing. Low malt aroma, a little bit lower than expected, a little bit more than the Pils, probably because of some of the more aromatic malts that were in here. Low Belgian fermentation character. You can talk about the phenols, you know, honey, whatever, but realistically, there's an overall sort of aroma and flavor profile that comes from a Belgian yeast, and this definitely has that. And part of that is the polyphenols. Part of it's the honey character. It smells amazing. It smells like a Belgian beer, like it's supposed to. No off aromas. I get very low fruit. Overall, 7 out of 12. Appearance, 3 out of 3. Large white head, very persistent. Light gold color. Just like your Pils, it's crystal clear. So I got to tell you, you're consistently in your process, you can make crystal clear beers that are light in color that have huge head. So congratulations, you're ahead of, you know, 2/3 of homebrewers, probably myself, and I'm not excluding myself from that 2/3. You're ahead of the game, just being able to do those three things consistently.
Sure,
which is really good. Flavor begins with kind of a, what I'll call like a faux sweetness sometimes. There's nothing sweet or under-attenuated about this beer. It's very well attenuated. But I think more so than the Pilsner, there's probably, I'm guessing there's some Pilsner malt in here, which will give you a flavor that's pleasant and it's sort of a classic Pilsner character that will hit you like sweetness, but it's not, doesn't have anything to do with the sugar content of what's left, or attenuation. It's just how the Pilsner malt tastes. Ethanol will taste sweet when you have a great fermentation and there's not fusels and stuff that makes it sharp. And I think part of what I'm perceiving is a little bit of sweetness is ethanol. To skip ahead a second, this is a very warming beer. There's a lot of alcohol in here, but you can't tell when you're drinking it, which is the the classic examples, the best examples of triple are supposed to be like.
Yeah.
Early on, I get a low fruity character, maybe a little on, I would think of as apple, not apple in any kind of acetaldehyde or off flavor way, but I mean, esters are fruity, and the fruit that it reminds me of is a little bit more to maybe the apple, like that kind of orchard fruit direction in a good way. Bitterness comes up to balance in mid palate. It's well attenuated. There's, again, I for a beer that probably had a really high starting gravity. This thing fermented out all the way, which is it's supposed to, and it tastes amazing. Finish is long and balanced. Overall, I give it a 14. Mouthfeel, 5 out of 5. Definitely warming. I skipped ahead and wrote that first because there's some ethanol in here. And I have a big sample here, and I'll be drinking this while Coop gives his analysis later. Medium high carbonation, medium body, more perky than creamy, not astringent at all. You know, could it be a little more highly carbonated? Probably, but you know, a triple is supposed to be like carbonated within an inch of its life in a lot of ways. But I didn't think that it was so lacking in carbonation to take a point off. So it's within what I think is the acceptable range. I mean, a triple is one of those you can always, could I put another volume of CO2 in here? Yeah, sure. Why not? And the limiting factor is you don't want the bottle to explode. And I guess you don't want to, you have enough CO2 escape that you die when you're bottling. Never die while bottling. That's a PSA from Dr. Homebrew.
Yeah, standard shit.
If you're bottling in a way that you're going to have a room full of CO2, don't do that. Don't die, because we want you to come back and listen to the show some more.
That's right.
And plus, we just don't want you to die. We're nice guys. Overall impression, I give this a 7 out of 10. You know what? I did not tote these up. What was I thinking? Let's see, 24. I give this a 36 total, which is very good. I think it's a well-made beer. The alcohol really sneaks up on you, which is an excellent achievement for a beer like this. I'm actually going to come up here. I'm going to give you a 15 for flavor, and I'm going to give you an 8 for overall impression. Wow. To put you up to excellent, to a 38 total. That's what I get for not, you know, toting up these numbers. I was making dinner right before the show. I got done and immediately ran to the laptop and, you know, started doing this. And I realized I had not added these numbers. You know, I just like with the pills, I think a little more malt aroma would be nice. But I didn't notice that as much as with the Pilsner, because you're going to have a malt bill with a triple that's going to have a little more. There's some different malts, a little more aromatic malts. You know, overall, well done. No off flavors, no off aromas. I'm going to be quiet and drink a bunch of this sample and hopefully not be too smashed to talk about this when Cooper's done talking.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck with that. All right, Cooper.
All right. Opened it up and had a nice light hiss on opening. Well packaged, proper bottling. So yeah, your bottling technique and everything is good. I'm not getting oxidation in any of these examples, and they've been sitting around for a while before being judged. So that says a lot for your packaging regimen. Aroma wise, pleasant, perfumey. You know, a light perfumey kind of estuary note up front with medium low floral hop alongside that. Some really nice ferment derived white pepper like spicy phenols at a medium high level. The malt is bread like and modest, just kind of there. The alcohol is very smooth, medium low in the nose, not poking out, nothing really sharp there. So it seems well fermented in that regard. There is a light lemony quality with a kind of that ripe banana ester in there faintly alongside the citrusy esters. Appearance wise, just exactly what Char said. It's like golden beer, fantastic clarity, medium head, fine white bubbles with very good retention, excellent retention. 3 out of 3. Flavor wise, it's fruity and spicy. As expected, orangey notes with medium pepper, and I get a very faint clove richness alongside that, kind of accenting the pepper. So nice little complexity to the spice. Medium bitterness, clean Belgian ale fermentation is apparent here, with low floral hop and a bit of spice from the hop. It's hard to discern. You're getting spice from the fermentation. I can talk myself into it. A spicy hop here too. But yeah, like in the pills, I picked up that, you know, you had that Tet with a Zaz. That was nice because I felt like, okay, I got that nice like floral with a little herbal from the Tet and the spice from the Zaz. And that was nice. And this one, it's mostly just kind of floral and I can talk myself into the spice if I want. But
do you want to?
It's probably not from the hops.
Okay.
But who knows? Who knows? Finishes dry. With the medium high alcohol there, it seems just a touch sweet seeming, but not like overtly sweet in that it's very dry, like Brian said. But yeah, it plays sweet, I think, from the alcohol, in my opinion, because there is a fair amount of it here. It's quite obvious to me. Not hitting me hard, but just it's a good amount of it. So not just because I'm doing kind of a damp January and I haven't had any beer this week until I had an excuse to drink some tonight. Damn. Thank you, guys. spice and fruit in the aftertaste lingers there. So yeah, this is all going to go downhill, JP. I apologize in advance.
Yeah, okay. That's all right, man, I guess.
Mouthfeel wise, it's got a medium body, low smooth alcohol warmth, no astringency or creamy qualities. Medium high carbonation with it's a bit biting, but not harsh. It's got an attack mostly from the alcohol warmth, but it's a smooth warmth. So it works. 4 out of 5 for mouthfeel. I don't know where I took the point off. Brian's just so generous in mouthfeel. Overall impression.
I'm a generous guy. What can I say?
That's right.
Overall impression. It's a pleasant drinking Belgian triple, hitting all the main goalposts for the style. Goes down fairly easy. It does seem a bit big, or, you know, on the bigger end for style, not out of style, with noticeable alcohol. I think overall, you know, it should have a firm maltiness in the nose, and the, you know, it should be. I don't think it's lacking in malt here, though. I'm not going to harp on that. What I think I would kind of like it to be is just a little bit more delicate seeming and deceptive, or maybe just a little bit lighter to balance what's there. It is not too sweet, but the alcohol jumps out just a bit more than hoped and has a kind of not sweet, but like a lightly that flavor of syrup, not maple syrup, but just like a syrupy edge to it, kind of. If you back off that ABV a bit, it might take that down a touch and play a little better. So it's not challenging me too hard, but, you know, and just take the best care of that fermentation that you can. There are challenging fermentations to run. I landed at exactly a 38 on this beer. Thank you, Brian. You came up 2 points and then we just matched. So I didn't have to do any adjustment. If we were at a judging table, we'd just be like, yep, next beer.
That's how in sync Coop and I typically are. We're right. Sometimes totally blind, just like right now. We'll land on the same number or within one or two without having any discussion and just totally blind. So that's the kind of quality judging you get from I Brian's.
A lot of times we will discuss the scores ahead of time, but I just judge them right before the show. Usually I judge them the night before, but anyway, yeah, we didn't discuss scores beforehand. So that was kind of a nice happenstance that we did.
Yeah.
Happened to be dialed in pretty well.
Yeah.
Jason's going to just disagree with us here.
I like the beer. I don't know. I don't pay attention to what you guys say. I like the beer. It is a little hot, but I guess that's what it should be. Yeah, I don't know. I like it. I don't really have... I'm not well versed on this style. I'm used to like a lot of the styles or a lot of the examples of this kind of style were more, I don't know. I'm trying to pin like a changing point or like a shift in how we thought about Belgians. I'm going to say pre 2010 arbitrarily. They were very cloying and very heavy and very syrupy and very bleh, 'cause that's what everyone thought that they fucking should be. And this is not that. And I do like it, but it's a little different. Maybe it needs a little more weight to kind of balance the alcohol, but it's a very good beer. That's all I got to say about it. What's your recipe, Scott? Hit us with that.
All right. So first time brewing this, this came in at 9.1% ABV, 37 IBUs. Again, full volume, no sparge, brew in a bag, basket. So I used, the recipe is 76% Weyermann floor malted pills, same bag as for the German pills. 3% aromatic malt, 3% white wheat malt, 12% cane sugar, which worked out to be 2 pounds. And then because of my basket size, I supplemented with 6% Pilsner and DME. I found that when I go over 13.5-14 pounds in the basket, that my efficiency goes down and becomes unpredictable. So I just cap it at 14 pounds. And if I need to go up higher, I use DME. RO water balanced slightly towards sulfate at 100, chloride of 75 and calcium 65. I did a step mash 130 for 10 minutes and then 148 for 60 minutes. Mash pH of 5.25. I did a 90 minute boil. Hops 60 minute. I did 16 IBUs of German Magnum and 13 IBUs of Tettnanger. So the same hops as for the German pills. Okay. And then at 15 minutes, 3 IBUs each of Tettnanger and Sots. OG was 1080. So fermentation. So I use White Labs 530 Abbey Ale with a starter, which I don't know if I was supposed to do that or not, but I did. This thing, I've never used this yeast before. This thing was an aggressive, violent fermenter. I mean, I had a 4-liter flask and it was coming out the top with just a 1200 milliliter starter.
Wow.
So that was my first, you know, that's when I realized I have to maybe, I was planning on pitching and then just letting it free rise, but I thought that may make a mess. But anyway, I crashed the yeast, oxygenated the wort, pitched the slurry at 66. And you know, within a few hours, this thing was, it was really aggressive. I mean, there was yeast and Krausen coming out my blow off tube, and I had to change the blow off tube several times in the first few days.
Nice.
Wow. So I tried to control it by keeping it at 66 Fahrenheit. On day 3, fermentation almost completely stopped. I'm like, oh my God. So that's when I pulled the plug on the chiller and let it free rise up to 65. And then I turned on the heater on my conical to get it up to 75. And it, even after then, it never really, there was fermentation activity, but it was not violent like it was the first few days. Mm. On day 8, fermentation seemed to have slowed. I checked the gravity. It was 1022. I'm like, well, that's not quite where I want it. I wanted it much lower than that. Day 12, I checked again, 1016. Day 14, same. So I did a trick that one of someone I met in foam blowers club said, hey, if you try a Belgian, if it could poop out on you, so keep some SO5 around. So I threw in 2 sachets of SO5 and fermentation restarted, and I got it down to 10-11.
Nice.
Wow.
That's pretty good, dude. That's crushing.
Nice save.
Yeah.
So I was hoping to get in the single digit, but that's fine. I cold crashed gelatin, cold crashed for 9 days, gelatin on day 5, closed loop transfer into a keg. I forced carbonated in the keg as high as I could without feeling like I was going to blow up the keg. And then bottled it 2 months later with a beer gun. And it was tricky because it's so highly carbonated that the beer in the line would completely carbonate.
Just foam
discharge.
Out.
Yep. You have to completely foam up a 10 foot restrictor tube. Sure. And in between just filling one bottle and then getting the next bottle, all the fluid would turn to gas. So I would have container. I'd have another container that I would blow all that foam into and then immediately put it into the bottle.
Oh, you had beer again. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So I had lots of volume losses doing that. And everyone I talk to says, hey, you got a bottle condition. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I had one bottle bomb. I'm like, done.
Yeah.
But anyway,
that's wild.
So that's it.
Do you often do that, the 130 degree step, like your protein rest and the step mash? I think that might be part of what's giving you, if you did that with the German pills and this one. Yeah, I think that you're getting a lot of small chain proteins out of that, and it's what's helping your head retention be really awesome.
I always have. With the floor malted, I've read somewhere that's slightly under modified. I don't know if it's true. Yeah, you know, you look at the COA and It looks like it's fully modified, but I've always done a protein rest, a short one with that malt, and it seems to work. So I've just kept doing it.
Yeah, the modern common knowledge is, yeah, I don't need to do that. But if it's working for you, hey, you know, that's something you can do, and it's easy to do with your system. So why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. What do you think? Do we have any recipe feedback or anything like that to offer? Or Scott, do you have any questions?
You know, to me, this came across as syrupy and sweet. I was expecting.
Really?
Yeah, I was expecting. Mm. Of course, I mean, this was bottled a couple months ago, so things change.
Yeah.
I've never had. I usually will bottle an extra bottle if I'm doing a competition and to save and review. And the beer in the bottle has never been the same as the beer in the keg. Something's happening between the keg and the beer gun and the bottle, even though I take the bottle and put it right in my fridge. So maybe something continued to evolve over the last 2 months in the bottle. That might be my guess. But to me, it was effervescent, but it still had some sweetness to it, even though it ended up at 10, 11. But that was my perception.
Yeah. So you bottled all of it from the keg. There's none left over in the keg to do a comparison.
It's gone.
Okay.
It's all gone.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, my opinion, like I said, talking about the flavor, is that the combination of the ethanol with like the Pilsner malt is going to give you a higher perceived sweetness than what your attenuation actually is. Mm. And that's just me. And, you know, Coop is kind of looking also, at me like, I don't know.
No, sir, but serving it out of that keg at full carbonation is going to play differently as well, because you've got all that, the CO2 coming out of suspension, foaming out in your mouth and giving you the, you know, that impression of fullness without sweetness, and giving that carbonic element alongside all that makes it play different than when it's just a little less carbonated. It's going to be a little duller, a little more lifeless, and a little come across a little more syrupy, maybe. I hesitated to use the word syrupy on my score sheet, but it has that edge to it. It's not from not being dry enough. 10-11 is fine for the style, especially one that's on the higher end.
Yeah.
You know, it can go from 10-85 down to, you know, 10-14 for sweeter versions of it. I don't know that would be super well balanced, but you know, that's the range that it lists. 10-08 is the lowest, and that would be maybe for one on the lighter end of the style. But 10-11 is fine, perfectly acceptable.
How do you sanitize your bottles?
I fill them completely to the top, let them sit there for 30 minutes or an hour, go do something. Then I rinse them out. I'm sorry, I don't rinse them out. I pour them out, keep them inverted, and I put them in a bottle rack inverted to let them dry. And then what I do right the night before I bottle, I will put them in a six-pack carrier and cover them with sanitized aluminum foil, and I'll put them in my refrigerator overnight.
Okay. What do you fill them with? Star sand?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that process as far as I can tell. I mean, that's pretty, you know, you're not going to have bacteria crawl back up you might have air currents like waft bacteria up into a bottle in that drainer. Realistically, you know, you're talking, that's not, you know, bacteria like to fall down out of the air if they're in the air.
Same.
Wild yeast or whatever. Yeah, a few things are going to get in. It's impossible outside of like an aseptic facility or some kind of high-speed line, you're always going to have something in there. The thing is, you want to overpower it with the good yeast and the good stuff you've already got in there. It doesn't sound like there's anything in your process. And if something got in, you're going to have an overly attenuated beer anyway.
Yeah, I'm not detecting any packaging issues here. I think it's packaged fine, and there's no bacteria or anything weird at play here. It's just the difference in carbonation aging in the bottle a little bit with a tiny bit of oxygen, but like very, 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 very little. There's no noticeable oxidation here, not in the form of any kind of papery or anything.
Yeah,
or even honey.
I'm just thinking out loud here.
Clean.
I get a little honey, but it's honey from the malt and from the yeast. It's not like there's a type of honey character that comes from oxidation. And Scott, your packaging is exemplary. I mean, you probably listened to the show. We go on and on, and by we, I mean me. I will just blah 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 endlessly about how tough it is to package and how it's the bugaboo of homebrewers. It's not the fun part, but it's important. Everything you're doing sounds like it's the right thing to do. I'm not noticing anything in your packaging process that it's causing a problem here.
Great.
Perfect.
You,
good to
you
know.
You could experiment with bottle conditioning, despite the past. You know, seeing how you take care of your beer, I'm sure you could master bottle conditioning with a beer like this and get it up to 3 or so volumes in the bottle and have it play like it does from the keg.
I wouldn't do it if I were you.
Who knows? Yeah,
don't do it. There's no reason.
Use really thick bottles if you do on those Belgians.
real fast. Trevor was in the chat. I don't know if he's still there or not. He says, in reference to the German pills, before we sign off, he says hot side low dough is more likely to contribute more malt aroma, I would think. What does that mean? Lower downtown? He's talking about Denver?
Dissolved oxygen, probably.
There you go. Hot side low dough is more likely to contribute to more malt aroma, I would think.
Interesting. Yeah, I've been reading about that, you know, the whole HSA, outside aeration. I've heard and I've read that the German brewers are very delicate with their wort on the hot side.
Mm-hmm.
I've looked at it, looked into it, and I could change up my processes and equipment to do that. It seems like, I don't know, it seems like it's kind of additive. There are a dozen different steps where you can reduce oxygenation on the hot side. And if one goes sideways, it might undo the others. I don't know. I have in my recirculation pump, I have a CIP inside the lid that will sprinkle on top of the grain bed. So that potentially, if I'm getting HSA, that's where it's coming from. I'm trying to find a rod that will go into the grain beds so there's no splashing, but
we're all brewers trying to find rods in this world. I mean, hot side aeration is sort of, if I remember correctly, it's sort of been debunked.
Yeah, those Brewlosophy guys debunked it in 2014.
Bamforth came on in 2009 and said that like they, you know, him and a couple other people were like, it's not a thing. There's nowhere that is actually a concern. It used to be, but the more we know about it, it doesn't matter. Like Budweiser doesn't care about it. So, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Tell Budweiser they should, you know what I mean? Yeah. So Charlie Bamforth, where I heard it. Fuck a Brewlosophy. Fucking Marshall. Piece of shit. I'm just kidding. I like Marshall. Marshall's a good dude. Okay, well, if that's it, we're wrapping up, huh? We're gone. Yeah. We're ready. Scott, you can actually leave now if you want. Not now, but like, you know, we're actually going to let you go at the end of the show. That's nice for you.
I was going to ask Scott if he knows those competitive homebrewing folks on the Facebooks or something.
No. Well, you can email him and you can ask him that. Because we're going to get out of here. We're already running over, and that's it. So, Scott, thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. And thank you. Thanks for your time.
Of course. Yeah, anytime. Shit. Anytime you want to tackle this again or whatever, let us know. And if you guys want to send in beer to this show and be treated like a king, like Scott was, email brian@thebrewingnetwork.com, and we will take anything you ferment, we will drink it, and give you feedback on it. And if we don't know what the fuck we're talking about, we'll find somebody who does. Go out on the street corner. I got a park across the street. Bring some people in. We'll see what's going on, right? We'll be the new TikTok sensation. But anyway, thanks a lot, everybody, for tuning in. And until next time. See ya.